The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy. Every now and then I have the chance to kind of set the front page section of the paper down and go a little bit deeper into some of the personalities and some of the stories behind some of the, the most important figures in history or the biggest concepts of life, some of the big debates of the day. And I have always been very honored to have this next guest join us whenever he's capable of doing so. It is not often because he is very busy as a senior pastor and is also someone who has kind of picked up the mantle of evangelism crusades in a way that has not been done really in regular frequency in recent years. But it was kind of pioneered by the person who is the subject of his most recent book. Now, if you've been with us in the last few years, you've heard us talk about Steve McQueen and some of his exploits. But Pastor Greg Laurie has always approached his writing about some of these characters from a very specific angle. And he's done the same here with his new biography, Billy Graham, The Man I Knew. And Pastor Greg, you don't get out to New York very often, but we always appreciate it when you do. But I'm so grateful that you've made time for us today at Kevin McCullough Radio. Thanks for being back.
Kevin, thanks for having me. I miss New York. It's been quite a while since I visited, and I just love that city, and I've been going there pretty much my entire life. But thanks for having me on to talk about this book about Billy Graham, who, you know, he was an iconic figure. I think that people, you know, most people have heard the name Billy Graham. As an example, he was on the list of the most admired men more than any other man in American history. And he just kind of went on from generation to generation of people that appreciated him. But now there's a whole new generation that have heard the name maybe, but they don't really understand this was a flesh and blood guy. This was a guy who was a risk taker, an innovator. He was the king of all media before Howard Stern claimed to be. He was a man who had a lot of energy, and he was a man who I would say quite literally changed the world.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. And I'm curious, Greg, and by the way, those of you joining us, you may recognize that voice. Greg Laurie, of course, heard every weekday morning here on AM 570 and FM 102.3, The Mission, WMCA. Greg, I was thinking back, and this was more around the time of his death, a couple of years ago, but I was trying to remember, like, the first time I had heard the name Billy Graham or maybe had seen a picture of him. And for me, it was pretty simple. I'm only 51, so the first time that I heard his name and probably saw his face was in my grandmother's living room watching TV, as she would, VCRs were somewhat new in my childhood, and she would videotape every crusade service that they would put on air anywhere she could find it. And she loved watching and was so moved by so many of his messages, a lot of which were, from a theological construct, not super complicated, and oftentimes not very long, but they would go in a direction that would kind of point the listener to this idea that they needed to make a decision about who Jesus was. And if they were taking Billy Graham at his word, then they would embrace that he was God's son and go down that path. I'm curious for you, what was your first memory, your earliest memory of Billy Graham?
Well, it's a parallel memory to yours, Kevin. I first saw Billy Graham watching television at my grandmother's home. That was black and white television back in those days.
That was before VCRs.
Before VCRs. It was in the 50s. And he made an impression on me. I liked him. You know, I was just a little kid. But then after I became a Christian at the age of 17, I went to hear him in person in San Diego. And then I fully understood what Billy Graham did and what he was about. And, you know, he once did an interview with David Frost, a British interviewer. And Billy told David that he studied to be simple. I think people may find it surprising to know more effort goes into making a message simple than making it complex. Billy was not simplistic, but he was simple. He understood that when he stepped into the pulpit, his job was clear. He was to preach for a decision. The difference between evangelistic preaching, which Billy did and which I do as well, and Bible exposition is, you know, the expositor is unleashing the text. They're telling you what the text says, what it means historically, what it meant historically, what it means to you today, and how to apply it. The evangelist, from the beginning of his message, is preaching for a decision, meaning that he's going to present who Jesus is, the claims that Jesus made, tell you how to come into a relationship with Christ, and then invite you to do it. So that was a very distinct calling on Billy's life. I once asked Billy, you know, about this, and he said, I don't think I'm a great preacher, but I think God has given me the gift to give the invitation. And it's one of the few times I disagreed with Billy. I said, well, I don't agree with you. I think you're actually a great preacher. And his response would always be, well, I'm just a country preacher. And the fact is, you know, he was raised on a dairy farm right. in Charlotte, North Carolina. He never aspired to be a world, you know, a renowned figure known around the globe. But maybe that's one of the reasons God plucked him from obscurity and used him, because this is not what he wanted to be. He wanted to be a baseball player like a lot of young boys.
Of course.
But the Lord had a unique plan for Billy's life. But I think that simplicity was a discipline, and it was one of the secrets of his success.
I think so. We're speaking with Pastor Greg Laurie, and you know him from Harvest Christian Fellowship in Southern California, and, of course, his radio broadcast heard on so many stations across the country each day. But he is the author of Billy Graham, The Man I Knew, the next kind of installment in Greg Laurie's kind of series of books. You're kind of into this biography thing now. You know, a lot of yeah. pastors take their sermon series and put a cover on it and call it a book. You're actually going out and digging into some of these lives. Just comment on that for me for a second about, you know,
yeah, well,
why.
It started with Steve McQueen. You know, I'd heard the story that McQueen had become a Christian. So just out of sheer curiosity, in my search engine, I typed in Steve McQueen, comma, Christian. I found a few articles. There was very little out there about it. But I found the name of a man that was his pastor named Leonard DeWitt. I tracked down Leonard, and I interviewed him, and I got really interested in the story, and I said, I've got to tell this story. And so my friend John Irwin, who's a filmmaker who directed I Can Only Imagine,
right.
I called John. I said, John, we're going to make a documentary film about the conversion of Steve McQueen. This is a fascinating story. It's never been told before. An unexpected conversion. So John was crazy enough to go with me down this rabbit trail. So we made a film called Steve McQueen, American Icon. Then I wrote a book called Steve McQueen, The Salvation of an American Icon. Well, people ask me, are you going to ever do another biography like this? I said, well, I might. And then I started thinking about doing one on Johnny Cash, because I've always been fascinated by Cash. He's an iconic figure. You know, a troubled soul, extremely talented person. So I did another book on him, and I have a great co-author in Marshall Terrell, who's written all of these books with me. So how do you go from Steve McQueen to Johnny Cash to Billy Graham? Well, the fact is Billy Graham was the glue between Cash and McQueen.
Wow.
When McQueen found out he had cancer toward the end of his life, he wanted to meet Billy Graham, because McQueen was already a Christian at this point. And so Steve was on his way to a clinic in Juarez, Mexico, and Billy met with McQueen on his jet, on McQueen's jet, that he had chartered for the flight. and they had prayer together. And then Steve realized he had misplaced his Bible. And Billy gave him his personal Bible. And Steve flew to Juarez. They did the surgery. It was successful, but unfortunately and tragically, he died in recovery. And they went into that room and pulled the sheet back, and he was hanging on to that Bible Billy Graham gave him. Hmm. So, and also, you know, Billy was a very good friend of Johnny Cash. They worked together a lot. They vacationed together. They fished together. Their wives were friends. And so I just thought, wow, Billy is such an unusual guy to have a friendship with Johnny Cash and Steve McQueen. And not to mention every president going back to Truman. And being a confidant and being an advisor and being a very good listener. And this is another one of Billy's secrets, in addition to his simplicity, was his ability to build bridges to unexpected people and minister to them. But but the amazing thing is he didn't brag about it. You know, sometimes you have so-called celebrity preachers who maybe have, you know, famous people come and visit them. So we see lots of, you know, selfies with them. And, you know, Billy never did things like that. Billy never talked about these people. Billy just ministered to them and tried to actually move them toward Christ.
That's such an encouragement and so typical of what I've been told about Dr. Graham all these years. We're speaking with Greg Laurie, whose new book, Billy Graham, The Man I Knew, is a biography. But it's told from the perspective that is a little bit kind of insightful from his own personal perspective. And, Greg, we can touch on that. You spent some time towards the end of his career helping him in some very important ways. But let's talk about the younger Billy Graham that people don't know. And I do have this question. Is there another link between Johnny Cash, Steve McQueen, Billy Graham, and Greg Laurie that includes motorcycles? Because it seems like, if memory serves me correctly, I don't know if Billy Graham did, but I think everybody else has a love for the motorbike in that group.
There's some truth to that. You know, here's the funny thing. Billy, to my knowledge, never rode a motorcycle. He may have, but his wife Ruth did.
And Franklin certainly did.
He rode a Harley down the road and actually dumped it. But that was Ruth. She was a real risk taker, and I talk a lot about her in this book. And just as an aside, there would never have been Billy Graham as we know him without Ruth Graham. She was in every way his equal. She was an amazing, insightful, intelligent, and beautiful woman. Coming back to McQueen, of course, McQueen was huge into motorcycles, motocross, Harleys, Indians. He rode everything you could ride, plus cars, race cars. You know, of course, we all know him for his movies like Bullet and, you know, his 67 Mustang, et cetera. I don't know about Cash riding motorcycles. So that one I can't recall anything there. But, you know, I think the link in these guys is you know, they came from nowhere to where they were. In other words, none of them was a son of a famous person. Steve was abandoned basically by his father. He never met his biological father. His mother was living a crazy alcoholic lifestyle. He was spent time being raised by his grandparents. And so he came from nowhere to become at one point the number one movie star in the world. Johnny Cash, he literally was out on the fields picking cotton, living in what I would describe as poverty. And, you know, he just realized he had this ability to sing. And one thing led to another, and he went on to become an iconic figure, beloved by generations, old and young alike. And then Billy, as I mentioned, a dairy farmer, you know, and he was somebody who he had a lot of energy in his childhood. Today they would probably describe him as hyperactive, but all that energy just needed to be channeled in the right direction, and it was. And that extra amount of energy that he had served him well later in his life, as he just had such an incredibly busy schedule and accomplished so much. You know, my book is not exhaustive. There have been great books written about Billy Graham that give you every detail of everything he did. But my book is more of like a highlight reel of what I think are significant moments, because I wanted to introduce Billy to a new generation. And also I include my personal interactions with him, my observations of him. You know, I'm an evangelist, as you said earlier, and he was an evangelist, so I think I had an understanding of what he did. And I bring that to bear in the book. It's probably the closest book, Kevin, that I've written on the topic of leadership, using Billy as the example of being just an amazing leader.
That is an interesting and important point, because I don't think people understand to what degree he had to be in order to maintain, as you were just saying, the kind of schedule he kept. I mean, in terms of just continents he preached on and the millions that he preached to with the gospel, I don't know that we'll ever on a human level see that. And to know the era that he did it in with the challenges that they have that we don't now. They didn't have the internet. Yeah. We do. They had slower planes. We have the faster ones. You know, everything was exponentially harder. Talk of to this point a little bit. There was a major crusade. There were a couple of major crusades I remember from other sources, and I'm not sure if you delve into them, but I know that the New York Times Square crusade, and I know that the tent meeting in Los Angeles were kind of the two of the more seminal moments of his preaching experience. And I'm curious if you address those and to what degree they played an impact on the perception of Billy Graham as a global figure and icon that made presidents want to reach out to him.
Yeah, well, certainly the L.A. Crusade was what launched him into international fame. He had been asked to come and speak there. And they had done a series of nights there, a few weeks, under a big tent they had erected. And it had gone pretty well, but it had not really been filled for the most part. And so they were ready to bring it to an end, but they were praying if the Lord wanted it to continue to give them a sign of some kind. Well, there was a radio personality named Stuart Hamblin. Everybody knew him. He was like this cowboy singer, a colorful guy who was known for his hard drinking and his antics and trouble he got into. And he actually accepted Christ at the last night of Billy's preaching there at the tent and talked about it in his radio show, so all kinds of press show up. At the same time, William Randolph Hearst, who owned many magazines and newspapers, was really impressed by Graham. And so he sent out a two-word telegram to all of his people, which simply said, "Puff Graham." So literally overnight, the press showed up in swarms, and Billy became an international news story. And then they continued the crusade, and history was made. He went to a Madison Square Garden, held a series of crusades. There's a book about it called God in the Garden. One night he had Martin Luther King get up and pray, which was very controversial in the day. But Billy forged a relationship with King,
right,
who he called Mike. And Dr. King came and prayed, and that became a history-making crusade. Thousands of people gathered in Times Square to hear Billy preach. I thought, wow, wouldn't that be amazing to do something like that today? You can see archival photos of it. And the final crusade that Billy did was in Flushing Meadows there,
yep,
where the World's Fair was held. And I attended that one.
We actually broadcast from there. This radio, yep, station actually broadcast from there for that for the duration of that. And,
yeah,
and you know, it's funny, Greg, such a small world. Sean Hannity, my competition on the other state, he was on ABC at the time, and I ended up sitting almost next to each other at the Flushing Queens Crusade, and our wives were there, but side by side, and it just speaks to the kind of universality of the truth of what Graham had to share. It was simple. It wasn't complicated. It was Jesus. It was hope, salvation, and it was for the celebrity. It was for the person that nobody knew, and it was for everybody in between.
Well, speaking of Sean Hannity, yes, I saw him there. I believe he interviewed Billy. And also, remember Hannity and Combs. What was Combs' first name?
Alan Combs.
Yeah, Alan Combs. So he was there, too. Now, here's what's interesting. Sean interviewed Billy, but I went to a tent in the back, and there sat Sean Combs watching Billy on the TV set watch his entire sermon from beginning to end.
Yeah.
And so here we have the conservative guy and the liberal guy.
That's right.
Both
that's
being
right.
reached by Billy. And guess who else showed up to that crusade? Bill and Hillary Clinton were there as well.
I had forgotten about that.
Yeah. Of the kind of bridges that Billy built.
Well, and that and speak to that for a second, because he had a personal relationship with, I believe, every president from, what was it, Eisenhower forward and
Truman on, yeah.
Obama was kind of, you know, a little less in terms of the personal because his health was starting to diminish in the later stages.
He met Obama.
Yeah, I think he prayed with all of them.
Yes, absolutely. So Billy, his first president, he was involved with was Harry Truman.
Okay.
And he kind of misfired in that one by his own admission. He went to the White House. Billy was, you know, already very popular at that point. He met with the president. He made the mistake in protocol of putting his hand on the president's shoulder and praying for him. And that was not supposed to be done. And then afterwards, he went with the two fellows that joined him. And the press asked him questions. He talked about what they discussed in the Oval Office. And then the press asked if he would, all of them would get down on their knees in front of the White House. And they recorded that. They filmed it. I took a picture of it. And Truman was not happy. Billy later met up with Truman and apologized for that. He was young. He was, you know, figuring these things out. He was very close to Eisenhower, and he knew every president, and he was closer to some presidents than with others. He was very close with LBJ. He was fairly close with Kennedy. In fact, he told me once, I asked Billy if he had any regrets, and he said, yes, he regretted one thing. He was speaking at a presidential prayer breakfast, and afterwards, President Kennedy said, Billy, I would like you to drive with me back to the White House. There's something I want to talk to you about. And Billy said, well, Mr. President, I have the flu, and I don't want you to catch it. How about if I come back in a week or so when I'm feeling better, and I'll visit with you? And President Kennedy said, okay. And then only days after that, Kennedy flew to Dallas, Texas.
Oh, no.
Assassinated. Wow. Billy said, I always wondered what he wanted to talk to me about, and I regret that. But he was close to Johnson, preached at President Johnson's funeral. Of course, he was close to President Nixon and was horrified to see a different side of the president that he had never seen privately. He was very close to Ronald Reagan, very close to George H.W. and George W. Bush. In fact, George W. Bush said that Billy played a key role in his conversion. And then fast-forwarding to President Obama, Billy was very old at this point and spending more time at home, but President Obama visited Billy there in Montreat. And Billy even had a relationship with Trump because I was at Billy's 95th birthday party, and businessman Donald Trump was there sitting at Billy's table. So he wasn't president yet, but he knew and admired Graham as well.
Yeah, that's some really incredible stuff. And friends, the book is packed with more of these little snapshots. Billy Graham, the man I knew, Greg Laurie, the author. Greg Laurie, not the pastor Greg Laurie. This is the biographer Greg Laurie, who's you know, launched his second career here, if you will, in these very intriguing biographies. Greg, it's always a pleasure to catch up with you. And you know, when we were talking about motorcycles, I was thinking about our friend Frank Pastore, who you know, it's been a number of years now, who's no longer with us, but
yes.
I know that he had immense respect for Billy Graham as well as part of his story. Anyway, it's great to catch up with you, friend. Thank you so much. And friends, be listening. A New Beginning, heard every weekday morning here on AM 570 and FM 102.3, the Mission WMCA in New York. Greg, next time you're out here, you know, you're going to have to say hi. You have to come in studio.
Absolutely. I look forward to it. I hope it's soon, too.
There you go. Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.